Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Singeri. All right. Open those phones, Danny. 244-1777-877. He just flipped the switch. 877-291-8255. That's the toll-free number, 877-291-TALK. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Yesterday, we were all business. Today, we're going to get all arty on you. Coming up at 9:30, Fairfax singer-songwriter Troy Millette is my guest. Then at 10 o'clock, we have another edition of The Book Show. This time, we're going to load you up with good reads for the summer ahead. Claire Benedict of Bear Pond Books in Montpelier, Star Latronica of the Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro are going to guide us through the stacks from 10 to 11. But for now, you're the conversation starter. 244-1777, 877-291-8255, or you can shoot us an email. Let's see, you can get in an early book suggestion. That's one thing you can talk about. And of course, you can talk about whatever you want, but I'm going to throw some things out here. Let's see. Yesterday, I gave you an interesting historical coincidence with Presidents Chester A. Arthur and James A. Garfield in North Pownall. Really incredible stuff. So if you want to share a neat history from your town or elsewhere in Vermont that you're aware of, that you think people don't know about, shoot it our way, 244-1777-877-291-8255. Yesterday I got some homework assignments. That's right, homework. Ray and Barry called in. He asked about when Vermont closed the rest areas on our interstates. Great question. I remember when it happened, or I thought I had the answer. Someone else wrote in and suggested something. So I did some research. I did my homework as Ray assigned. Thank you, Ray. And I'll let you know what that was, what I found. Let's see. Sox big winners again last night. Same score as the night before, 10-8. How weird is that? Boy, if you had bet that Quinella, or whatever that would be, you'd be pretty rich. Beat the Atlanta Braves two straight, so sweep that series. The pitching's starting to fail, but the hitting is, it keeps them in every game, so we love to see that. All right, 244-1777, 877-291-8255, emails vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. Get us started here on the open phones. Gonna have them till 9:30 before, we talk to Troy Millette. All right, so here's what Ray in Barry asked yesterday. He said, okay, when did Vermont close the rest areas on our interstate? And let's see. Now, I should tell you that, yeah, there still are some that are open, right? But there were some that were closed. And since that happened, a new one has opened, if you remember. The Maplefields Vermont Traveler Service Center, which is just off exit 7. That opened a few years ago, and that is open 24 hours. One of the problems Ray is saying is, you know, you go long stretches on the interstates, and there's no facilities, no rest areas, and especially some close early, you know, so there might be like a porta potty out there in the parking lot. Not the most comfortable thing, especially when it's like 90 degrees, but you know, sometimes that's what you're going to have to do. So one listener, Tom, emailed in and said that he thought it was Howard Dean. Now, it is possible that Howard closed some, but that I don't think is what Ray was referring to. I think he was thinking more recently, and it was actually during Jim Douglas's term in office. Here's what happened. The idea was put forward in December of 2008. We were feeling the effects of the Great Recession, and the state was looking for ways to cut the budget. I remember Jim Douglas asking for recommendations. People were calling in to shows like this and making recommendations. Anyway, I found this particular story, and here it says, quote, "The state of Vermont's plan to close four highway rest areas in a cost-cutting move is getting a chilly reception from motorists. Facing a projected $60 million budget gap, the state announced plans to close Interstate 89 rest areas in Highgate, Sharon, and Randolph, and an I-91 rest area in Hartford. Doing so would save about $1 million annually. That was according to Jerry Myers, who was the commissioner of the State Department of Buildings and General Services. So there you have it, Ray and Barry. Great question. And it was around 2008, and you can remember during the Great Recession, things, you know, all of a sudden in a hurry. I mean, you can remember since 2000, you know, 9/11 caused a certain ripple. You know, the Great Recession certainly caused havoc financially and job-wise, and of course tax revenue-wise for the state, and the pandemic. So that's what we have, and I think that's the right answer for Ray and Barry, who wanted to know, when did that happen? When did we shut them down? And I can, you know, you'll still see the exit ramps, you know, to go off, but there's like fencing, and the buildings, the little buildings that were there, were taken out. Now, you know, you still have nice ones in Williston. There's the veterans one down just as you come back into the state on 89. There's one up in Georgia. You know, there's still some around. But, yeah, the one I count on now is definitely the one on Exit 7 in Barrie, the Maple Fields Traveler Service Center, because it's 24 hours, and plus they stock a lot of great Vermont products. All right, we've got the phones open, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can join in, talk about what you'd like to talk about, ask me a question, give me homework. I've got another homework assignment that I'll tell you about after the break. Yeah, I was loaded up with homework last night, and had to get some of that done. So you can call in at 244-1777. Toll free, it's 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. And we'll see what you want to talk about. Looks like, good. Let's see. Looks like we're going to get a follow-up to my homework assignment because I think we've got Ray joining us from Barrie. No, this is Ray in Middlesex. Okay. Different Ray? Hi, Ray. Go right ahead.
Hi there. No, I'm not different Ray. I'm the Ray, but I don't know where you got it from, Barrie.
I probably forgot. I just wrote down the wrong thing.
But I am from Middlesex, and okay. I didn't ask when. I asked why they closed them down.
Okay.
And you were saying that
well, the reason they say
the state so much money,
$1 million a year.
But why couldn't they have taken at least those rest areas out to private businesses that would maintain them, mm-hmm. and still give the motorists options to be able to use the facilities?
That's a bigger question, Ray. A great question, as a matter of fact. Stay on the line. Let's talk about this a little.
Yeah.
Because that has been suggested. We see it in every other state, right, that's how a lot of it is handled. You know, you pull off in New Hampshire, and you've got, you know, the liquor there, and you've got restaurants inside and the whole thing. And the new one that has been added since those closed, Ray, back in, you know, 2008, is the one at Exit 7 in Barrie. And that is definitely a commercial partnership, you know, between the state and Maplefields. And I don't know why we haven't pushed that further. Now, the ones that were taken out, they're gone. I mean, they've taken them down and moved them, you know. But they're still, you know, on and off ramps. You know, I guess I'm just going to play devil's advocate because I don't know the answer, but maybe, Ray, they wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't turn a profit enough for, a commercial operation. You know, in the past, I think you remember what they were. I mean, they were pretty much, there might be a soda machine and maybe a snack machine there, right? A couple of vending machines, and a little, you know, commode. I mean, you had, you know, two small restrooms there, but they weren't staffed like the ones at Williston or, you know, elsewhere where there's people there and handing out brochures and things. There's still maintenance costs, but you're right. Like, why wouldn't you get a commercial operation involved who could keep that going? I'm not really sure. But I think when you're governor.
Well, it's just like he turned around and the governor turned around and made them tear the buildings down.
That's
they
right.
They could have used the building.
Yeah, they did.
And they could have enlarged the buildings to get more facilities there.
Yep.
Like what, and I've got nothing against Maplefield. I mean, Maplewood at Exit 7.
Right.
I visit them a lot. They've yep. got excellent breakfasts.
It's 24 hours, so you know you can count on them, right? It's not like
oh yeah,
it's 8:30 and you're thinking, are they still going to be open? Those guys are open 24 hours. Yeah, they've got food there for you. There's you know, clean and there's gas, so you're never in trouble if you can make it to Exit 7.
Yep.
But listen, Ray, when you become governor, I'm going to back you on that deal, and we open, we reopen those rest areas and we make them commercial. All right.
Well, they should. I mean,
I agree.
To me, it was crazy to just tear everything down.
Yeah. Yeah.
That cost us money to tear it down. All I had to do was fence it off.
Yeah.
And then if you could find commercial business that would come in, and even if they enlarged it,
yep.
they'd get revenue off of it then.
That's what it appears, right. And I don't know why the state did not do that. All right, Ray. Hey, thanks for the assignment. Thanks for following
yep.
up. All right, take care. Have fun in Middlesex, not Barry. Yep. Lori writes, hey, Rick, Exit 7 is actually Maplewood, not Maplefields. I know it's confusing because the names are so similar, but she's spot on right. E4 on Singeri. I booted that one. Thank you, Lori. Thanks for fixing that for me. And, yeah. I'm so fallible. All right, let's go to Doug, who's joining us from Randolph. Hey, Doug, how's it going?
Good. Yourself?
Very well, thanks.
I recollect Governor Dean had a lot to do with closing rest areas, and he also spent all the highway funds on education.
So that would have been when? Back in the 90s?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was before I got here, and it's possible. So were there other rest areas that were open at the time that got closed? Do you remember?
No, they seemed to all fold up at the same time, and it was, if I remember right, he was trying to get education money because there was an awful lot of howling that year about spending all the gas tax on education, too.
Interesting.
And letting the roads slide.
Yeah, because, you know, when were the ones like down in Brattleboro, which is a really nice entrance area, the one in Williston, when were those built? I would have thought those would have been built during that era, but I could be wrong.
No, they were built before that. They were built when the 91 was built. 89 was built through the late 60s.
Right.
Right. And Governor Dean also stands right next to Governor Shumlin, as far as I'm concerned, as the worst governors we ever had.
Oh, no kidding.
That's all I got.
Thank all you. Right. Hey, Doug, thanks so much for calling. All right. Okay. So, I don't know. I wasn't here, and so I shouldn't just schlough off that Dean didn't do it. I do remember very distinctly the four, and I found the article that happened in 2008. But I'll dig. You know, so Doug's giving me more homework, basically, is what's happened. And that's good, Doug. I appreciate it. I'll see what happened under the Dean administration with the rest areas being closed. Still does bring up the Ray question about, hey, well, why don't we commercialize it, right? Why don't we have a business run those rest areas? We see it in so many other states. And so there's financial incentive for them to stay open. Danny, our director, says, yeah, and let them put up a single billboard to pay for it. Now, that's going to take a change in state law. You know, we haven't had billboards. You know when that happened? That was back in the 60s. Think how, like, far ahead, how progressive that idea must have been when somebody came up with no more billboards in the state. What? Back in the 60s. All right, but it looks like, you know, and there could have been different waves of us closing down rest areas. It's possible that there were many more. You know, now there's very few along our interstates, and so maybe both Governor Douglas and Governor Dean had to shut some down. All right. Let's see. What else? I did have another homework assignment, so let me get to that. Well, I'll throw out some more suggestions, too. The phones are open for, we got another 8 minutes. You got plenty of time to get in, 244-1777-877-291-8244. Have you dared take a dip in a Vermont lake or pond yet? I bet it's still cold, but you might just be a polar bear and jump in. Also, bass fishing has started. Have you gotten out there? Let us know what you caught now. And, you know, as we heard from our last caller, who was the best or worst governors, you know, of all time? Now, I'm sure he's not going all the way back to Chittenden when he says that that Dean was one of the worst. And I think Shumlin, Peter Shumlin. All right. Let's say this. I heard from Beth, and she emailed to ask if anything has been found out about the seeds people received in the mail a couple years ago that they didn't order. Did any lab see what they were or grow them out? Was it found where they came from? So that I got an email yesterday after the show. So I had two homework assignments last night, and I went to work on it. I might have gotten incomplete on my first one, you know, saying that the rest areas closed in 2008. Maybe there were some earlier than that. I'm going to have to dig deeper. But first of all, Beth, what you should know is it wasn't 2 years ago. It was just a year ago when those seeds were mailed to people. I know we lived a decade in 2020, and so it's kind of a morass to figure out, like, when did that happen? It was like 2 years ago. No, this was just a year ago. People were getting seeds in the mail, and they didn't order them. They didn't know what they were. I don't think they were labeled in any way. They came from China. And I found this story, and it says Osama El-Lissi from the Plant Protection Program of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service said the seeds have been identified. And she said, mostly as plants you'd find in a standard backyard garden. Quote, we have identified 14 different species of seeds, including mustard, cabbage, morning glory, some of the herbs like mint, sage, rosemary, lavender, then other seeds like hibiscus and roses. Nonetheless, they weren't anything really bizarre that you had to worry about, but I know the Department of Agriculture asked people not to plant them, since you never know if you're getting something invasive, right? So you don't just plant random seeds. Now, the story went on to say, agriculture officials believe the effort is part of a brushing scam. Essentially, here's what that is. A company sends unsolicited items to customers and then posts reviews for those items to make it seem as if the company has more sales and customers than it actually does. Of course, they give themselves 5-star ratings. And some people were getting like really good gifts, like really nice items. Yeah, it is heady play, according to Danny. This particular company, I guess they were selling seeds, and so they would just send them off to people randomly. And then now that they have your information and you did receive the seeds, they would put in these reviews as you saying, oh, yeah, these seeds are great. You know, they got my hibiscus and roses, they grew right up and did great things. Gosh, who knows if it works, but that's why, if you got the seeds, that's why you got them. It wasn't too sinister. It's kind of, you know, it's a little nefarious, but nothing so bizarre or brutal that, you know, you weren't growing, I don't know, marijuana for somebody or something else. So that's it. If you got the seeds, the USDA, you can find out what they tell you to do. I think they didn't want you to open it up. I don't know if you were supposed to send them in, but now you could probably toss them. I don't know. You should probably look that up. Am I getting another incomplete? We'll see what Beth says if she gives me an eye. I get homework. I don't know that I'm doing my homework very well right now. 244-1777, 877-291-8255. I do know the phone numbers, and I do know we have a couple more minutes. You can sneak in and, I don't know, you can give me grades or you can talk about something, ask me a question I don't know the answer to, more homework. Oh, man. I'm brutal. It's better when I can just ask questions of guests and let them do all the talking. Then me have to do homework. All right. And this will probably go on. Now I have to work all night on these same two issues. Rest areas in Vermont. When and why did they close? And was I right, or was there some that went down the Dean administration? I'm going to have to find Howard Dean to talk about that one. And then what should you do if you still have those seeds that are hanging around that were sent out a year ago? Because a lot of people, I'm sure, didn't know what to do, and they're probably sitting there, and they look at them every few months, like probably Beth, and thinking, what do I do with these things? Oh, I'll ask Rick. Well, I at least identified them for you and why they were sent to you as a brushing scam. Oh, man. Two incompletes. I thought I was going to ace this today, my homework. All right. Well, if you're still listening after my failed attempts at doing homework, man, I used to rush through homework as a kid. I used to drive my siblings crazy because I could, especially math, man. If I had math homework, I could be done in seconds, and then back to the TV, drive my siblings crazy. Now I know I got to slow down and do a more thorough job, or I'm going to get incompletes on my homework now that I've got the world listening at the work I do. All right, Danny, shut it down. That's enough. We're going to get to a break. He gives the chop sign. All right, we're going to pop out, get a CBS News update, and then we're going to return to meet Troy Millette of Troy Millette and the Fire Below. And a reminder that midday news service coming up at noon today, that's going to be followed by 3 brilliant hours of The Getaway with Greg Hooker. Now, there's a guy who does his homework. He gets a complete. He gets an A+. I get 2 incompletes. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. I am so hoping the pandemic has taught us a few things. Yeah, the importance of washing our hands thoroughly, got that one. But also the important role the arts play in our lives, and to remember to make efforts to get out and support the visual and performing artists that we think are doing a great job. Well, things are opening up again. Vermont hit its 80% mark. And remember all those times you felt trapped inside during the quarantine? Well, now is the time to get back out and see live music and dance and sing and enjoy yourself. One of the Vermont artists you want to do that with is Troy Millette, and he joins us now. Troy, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Troy. Listeners, if you've got a question for Troy, if you're a fan of his music and you've been missing it live, you can call us 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. There's 3 musical iterations of Troy Millette, solo acoustic, and then what are the other 2, Troy?
Yeah, so I also play in a couple acoustic duos now. I guess there's more than 3.
Okay.
I'm a band called Troy Millette and the Fire Below, and so there's an acoustic duo with Dylan Gombas, who plays violin, and we do duo stuff with him, and also with Dan Rahilly, who plays guitar in our band, and then we also do like an acoustic trio with upright bass and acoustic guitar, and we played at the Essex Experience last night, and we did their Truck Stop event, and it was super fun. So we kind of had a little bit of everything rolling around this summer, which we were so excited to get back at it that we just didn't want to turn anything down. So anything we got asked to do, we're like, yep, we'll make it work. Let's throw something together.
Troy, do you ever show up now? You got like, what, five different things going. It's like, wait, which Troy Millette am I tonight? Who am I with?
I had to start a Google Calendar for the first time in my life.
Nice.
And I have to change the colors for what, you know, I'm like an old school guy. I used to write it down in like a little black notebook.
Right.
But now I have the Google Calendar. It's like, oh, when it's blue, it's Dan and I. When it's green, it's Dylan and I. And when it's red, it's the full band. So now, you know, now I can kind of look at it and get my, you know, kind of get my bearings before I roll up into a place and four other guys show up when I was expecting to just see Dylan. So that's kind of nice.
After a year of pandemic, I mean, what a great problem to have right now.
Absolutely. I believe I was trying to do a quick count last night. I think we have 70 shows booked until the end of the year right now, which is, you know, in a year where we played seven probably last year, you know, it's a good problem to have. I'm very thankful that things are opening back up and that people seem to have more than ever an interest in coming out and hanging out.
Oh, Troy, that makes me so happy. Good for you. Now, let's talk about, tell us about the band, The Fire Below.
Yeah, so The Fire Below is kind of started a few years ago. We played, Dylan Gombas and I played Grace Potter's Grand Point North Festival. So it's kind of two stories about how The Fire Below came to be. And when we played Grand Point North Festival, we were asked the next year to come back and play the after party. And they asked us to play as a full band, and I kind of played it off, like, what else would you want, even though I had never played with a full band before. So we kind of spent the next few weeks frantically calling everyone we know that plays instruments. And we ended up just hiring the band that basically recorded the record, Living with a Ghost, with me in the studio. But none of them were available to rehearse, so they literally learned these, like, 10 songs to come play. And it was Ezra Oakland on drums and Trevor Contois on bass. Isaac French played keyboard. And we had a great time. But then Ryan Clausen, who used to book at Nectars, who's now our full-time drummer, had always kind of been bugging me about it because I would go play Nectars solo acoustic, like 7 to 9 on Wednesdays. And we'd play Nectars dozens of times. He's like, hey, you know, if you ever want to play like an actual set, you know, like at 9 o'clock, you got to get a band. I was like, I was so nervous about it. I was like, no one wants to play these songs. And yeah, I just write songs in my bedroom. No one wants to play these. And then it kind of came full circle that we started this band a year after him kind of bullying me into doing it without him. And now it's kind of circled back around that he's the full-time drummer in our band. So we've been really lucky. We've had some opportunities to play with Counting Crows. We have for Grace Potter. Or we did a show with Rick Springfield and Richard Marx. We've been really lucky.
I am very impressed. And the name is so great. Troy Millette and The Fire Below. Who came up with that?
That was me. I
well done.
Yes, thank you. You know, we kind of were joking about not being edgy enough. And I was like, I'm going to come out there. We're going to play all Metallica covers. And it's going to be Troy Millette and The Fire Below. And, you know, it just kind of jokingly stuck when we booked that first band gig. And it has a nice ring to it.
Yeah, you know? Don't change it. It's gold. It's gold. Is there
We've heard all the mispronunciations of it. The fire down below is what we get a lot.
Yep.
So, you know, we make sure the merch is prominent on the wall when we show up so that the venues get the hints for the sign outside.
So is there, what would it be, like a sixth Troy Millette who also has a day job, or are you a full-time musician?
I do have a day job as well. I work one-on-one with students who have autism. So I do a lot of benefit work. Every year we do an event called Home for the Holidays, and we donate the funds from that to Northwestern Counseling and Support Services school-based autism program. So last year that kind of went away, and we just, you know, kind of pivoted and did a virtual event that we recorded at Robot Dog Studio. And I live in Winooski, so you're going to hear the jets coming over me the whole interview. So I'm not like in a mine shaft or anything. That's what you're hearing. But we got to pivot and do that. And we actually just did another autism awareness benefits in April for Autism Awareness Month with Jarrett Reddick from Bowling for Soup, like the 1985 guys. And Josiah Johnson from The Head and the Heart. And it was all virtual, and we donated the cash to MTSS as well. And it's kind of, I've been really lucky that I work in a field that you know, it's so fulfilling in different ways than music, but that can also kind of tie my love to both things, and been able to explore a lot of fundraising and gain a lot of experience doing that. So I'm fulfilled in both.
You sound happy and fulfilled. When did you pick up the guitar, and when did you know that this is what you really should be doing? You need to be playing music.
Yeah, so I had the choice between taking beginning guitar or Art 101 when I was a freshman in high school, and I cannot even draw a stick figure. I am the worst. My
so guitar by default.
Guitar by default. And I had kind of I'd been in like middle school bands. I'd sang in middle school bands. We did Smells Like Teen Spirit at our middle school talent show and got disqualified because we jumped off the stage into the crowd. And I was like, you know, this might be for me. So then we kind of did the beginning guitar thing. And all I did was learn the six chords. And then I was like, well, I don't want to play Hot Cross Buns anymore. I'm going to write songs. And I started writing songs to impress the senior girl that was also in my beginning guitar class. And after that, I was like, you know, when people ask me to come play in their restaurant, I just get to sing these sad songs about this girl. She's a pretty sweet gig. And maybe she'll catch on and it'll turn things around. It never did. But
she was never impressed.
She was never. I say often at our shows that I started writing songs to impress one girl, and we've been lucky to have some success. And now I disappoint women on a much broader spectrum.
I don't know if I should congratulate you or console you.
Well, it's been really functional. It's been really functional to keep writing the next record. So
well done, good. We're going to hear several of your songs, but they sound so perfectly melodic and are so deftly written. When did you start writing your own music?
Yeah, so I've kind of always had the drive to write and create my own things. I remember being like obsessed with poetry in like the fifth grade, and we read this book and it was all shape poetry. I was like, all I need to do is put the sentences in shape. Like, I could do that. And of course, you know, that grows into other things. Like, as school should work, if it's done well, you should, you know, have some interest in some of those things and follow them. So I would say it was pretty early on. Like I said, I learned those first few chords, and as far as writing stuff to chords and playing full songs, it happened really quickly for me. So I was probably about 14 or 15 when I wrote my first full, like, here's a song with guitar that I'm going to play for someone. I was probably about 14. It was called Don't Let Go, and it was not good. I definitely should have let go of it.
It's all right. You gotta get a few bad ones out of the system to know what is good. And I'm glad you stuck with it. All right, we're going to take a break and then return. We're going to continue our discussion with singer-songwriter Troy Millette. Listeners, you can give us a call with a question, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And let's get a taste of some of his music as we head into the break. This is Brothers by Troy Millette.
I grew up just a little bit louder now. There's traffic lights, double yellow lines run straight through that town. The old corner store where we go when we're bored by beer on the rage. It stands tried and true, just like me and you. Some things they don't ever change. We are brothers, but we're not the same. Built to love and trust, to fight and cuss, to our dying day. Brothers, but we're not the same. Built to love and trust, to fight and cuss, to our dying day. I still remember. I don't know why. Seasons change in the blink of an eye. I think of you. Sometimes counting snowflakes, some lonely drive, singing wander on bus, stumbling through my life. I think of you sometimes. Well, I'm on my way to Tennessee, might never hear from me again. Oh, I wanna buy some.
some boots, two roots out there beyond the black tops. And
Troy Millette and the Fire Below, Magnolias is what we're listening to. We've got Troy with us. Troy, when things shut down and live music performances ended, how did you transition?
Yeah, so we were kind of in the middle of writing and recording our next record. And we had a ton of shows booked. We had just headlined Higher Ground for the second time. And, you know, we were looking out at our busiest summer and fall ever. And, you know, like anyone else, I think we were really confused and kind of comforted by the fact that it was just going to be a 2-week shutdown. Like, right. Oh, we're going to cancel shows for the next 2 weeks, which would lead right up to a 10-day tour that we had. We had 10 shows in 9 days across the Northeast. And we're like, yep, so we'll cancel our local stuff and then we'll be ready to hit the hit this back at the end of April. No big deal. And, of course, you know, here we are in June of 2021, and things have just barely started to open back up. And, you know, some venues didn't even make it through. So for us, we kind of, my mindset, I have this really interesting artist complex of I have a big fear of change, but also a huge fear of stagnancy. And I just, I told myself that I didn't want to sit here and in a year, if it goes that long, I feel like I didn't do anything. So I was like, okay, how can we pivot and make sure that our sounds and our faces are still in front of people as safely and as often as they can be. And we really kind of adapted to the live stream format. I believe we did 9 live stream shows with Robot Dog Studio out of Williston. Ryan just kind of followed me into this rabbit hole and purchased all this video switching equipment so that he could host bands in his studio and kind of push their stuff out there. We did a great series with Higher Ground, who had every Thursday night different local and national talent broadcasting for free on their page, and we just kind of poured our energy into that and writing and kind of restructuring the songs that would have probably been fine for the record, but now that it's time to kind of get back at it, I think have evolved and are really great songs that are going on this next record. So we kind of just tried to take advantage of the gift of time, which we don't always have when we're playing 100 shows a year.
You know, I do love the opportunity to now, you know, during the pandemic, to stream bands. It really is great for, you know, the fan, the listener. The tough part is when you come to the end of the song, and I haven't asked any performer yet, but, you know, normally you finish a song and people are applauding, you know, so there's this nice, lovely end and transition to your next song. But when you're doing this streaming and you're just going into silence, right? What do you do? How do you feel?
Man, that was a real awkward thing for me to navigate because our show is a lot of, I like our shows to feel like if you walked into our living room and we were having a rehearsal, you know, so it's not Ryan Clausen, our drummer, man, that guy takes so much grief during our shows. And it, you know, half the show is the banter between the band. And my solo show, same thing. It's not uncommon for me to, you know, last night we were playing the Essex Experience and I made a joke about how it felt like a Dave Matthews show because everybody's in the lawn chairs. So at the end of the set, I went into a falsetto version of Crash Into Me.
Oh, man.
And, you know, you kind of get that, applause and that kind of laughter. So our show's really built on that. Yeah. So the first time that I finished a song, like you said, to thunderous silence was really interesting. And the first time I kind of just hopped right at no gap, just right into the next song. Thank you. And then boom, next song.
Yeah.
Songs go by pretty quick if you don't take that moment of pause in between. And then I kind of figured that, you know, people are looking for that sense of familiarity. Ugh, can't speak this morning. I just rolled out of bed. And we were like, you know, so we're going to do the same show and we're going to interact with the comment sections as if they were actual applause.
Yeah.
And it kind of, it switches the viewpoint for me as like, this is now a performance. I feel like a lot of times when I step on stage, it's me with a guitar and here's what I have to say. And, you know, these kind of really became performances where it's a stage show. It becomes a one man show and you're interacting with yourself. And you're kind of getting that gratification afterwards by scrolling through and seeing what people have to say. Facebook was really a wonderful platform and a wonderful free platform for musicians like myself, because there is some sense of real time interaction with how their comments roll through. And it was also great, as you said, you know, there's a lot of people that, whether it's, they can't come out to Nectars at 9 p.m. on a Thursday because you have kids and work and, you know, life gets in the way. Weekends are busy. You got the birthday parties, you got the, you know, this and that. So to be able to sit down on your phone for an hour becomes a lot less daunting of a task than driving 30 minutes, paying a $5 cover, sitting there ordering the food, you know. And yeah. And I think that a lot of people who don't usually consume our music live kind of got a taste of that. So hopefully some of those folks will now feel like it's worth the babysitter to come out and check out what we do face-to-face. So, Troy, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a couple minutes left, and we'd be remiss not to talk about the very cool microbrewery tour you got going on. So tell us about some of the places you're playing and what this is all about.
Yeah, so we kind of breweries have been like huge in our development kind of here in the Vermont scene. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just like to load our schedule up with them because I like to load myself up with the microbrews while we're there.
I thought so.
So as a beer lover and a music lover, it's kind of a no-brainer to
it's
just
gold.
Say, hey, well, we could these things pair really well together. And we're actually playing, we're doing a month-long residency on Thursday nights at Weird Window in South Burlington. It used to be Farnham, and yep. It was Infinity before that, and it's a beautiful location. And Jack and Emily, like, wonderful people. And we did last month, we did Thursdays at First Republic Brewing in Essex. We just played Switchback. We're playing 14 Star on Friday. We're playing Black Flannel in Essex. So, you know, and it's kind of one of those, the music culture in Vermont and the brewing culture in Vermont, I feel like, kind of go hand in hand, and they're both very supportive of one another. So it's not uncommon for us to play a show at Weird Window and be like, oh, I work at Foam. Like, your band should come play Foam. You know what I mean? And
nice.
Vice versa. It's not uncommon for me to roll up at Weird Window and be like, hey, my friends the Owl Stars or Bethany Connor or Ryan Sweezy are also great. And I know I'm doing four Thursdays, but there's like 52 Thursdays in a year, and you should fill them all with music. So it's cool to integrate into a new scene that's as supportive as the scene you're coming from. And I really enjoyed getting to meet a lot of these brewers and a lot of people who just enjoy good beer and listening to music, and that wouldn't have come out again to, you know, a $15 ticket at Higher Ground is a much bigger commitment than rolling in for a $6 pint and, like, maybe enjoying the Mr. Jones cover we play.
Nicely done. Troy Millett is a singer-songwriter living in Winooski. You can learn more about his microbrewery tour. Check out more of his music at TroyMillettMusic.com. Troy, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is awesome.
All right, we're going to finish with a song. I just want to let people know, though, as we stop out for CBS News, we're going to come back after the top of the hour for the latest edition of The Book Show. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV, and we'll finish with Troy Millett's Runaway on WDEV.
My cave in. Got a thunderous gal out on the prowl. She is stuck staying in. This whole damn town knows what he's all about. Breaking it down just for fun. If she had the money, she'd move to the country. Leave him and all that is done. Sometimes you gotta run away. Pack some rags for the getaway. Stack boxes in a brand new basement. Before you're too complacent, sometimes you gotta run away. Turn your back on your yesterday. Get gone before it all goes wrong. Match the price that you pay. When you're sure that there's a better way, yeah. Sometimes you gotta run away. Run away. Pride and joy is a blonde-haired boy. His laugh sounds just like hers. Raising him up to be humble and tough. That's the life that he deserves. And that sometimes wonders if she was right. Deep inside them she knows what's best for them both. Some life of their own. Knows what it's like to be loved. Sometimes you gotta run away. Pack some bags for your getaway. Stack boxes in a brand new basement. Before you're too complacent. Sometimes you gotta run away. Turn your back on your yesterday. Get gone before it all goes wrong. Match the price that you pay. When you're sure that there's a better place, yeah. Sometimes you gotta run away.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Readers rejoice. This next hour is the fourth edition of the Vermont Viewpoint Book Show. Your chance to add to that growing pile of summer reads that you'll plow through over the next couple of months when you're at the lake, you're in the mountains, or at the beach. It's also a great opportunity to share the books you've read recently that you just must tell the world about, hoping that that treasured tome will bring others as much joy as it brought you. Now, keep in mind, these do not have to be brand new titles, though most probably will be. But if you just read something from the 60s or the 80s for the first time and you loved it, share it. No restrictions during our book show, okay? Helping us with suggestions of their own is our crack staff of recommenders, Claire Benedict of Bear Pond Books in Montpelier. Claire, welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great to have you. And joining us for the first time is someone, I'm dying to do this, I just have to introduce with that gusto that Oprah Winfrey uses when she introduces a guest, Starla Tronica. Sorry, Star. Star is the director of the Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro. Star, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Oh, my gosh. There's no place I'd rather be.
Okay, good. Do people introduce you that way when you come, like, walking into rooms or stuff?
Well, actually, once I met a young librarian who when she realized who I was, she said, "You're Starla Tronica." I think she was expecting somebody, you know, in spandex and a cape. But anyway, but I haven't worn those for years.
All right. And listeners, let's make Danny work this hour. Call in with your book recommendations. Our numbers, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. I should say, let's make him work harder, because he does work. He really puts in a tough shift here. Our email, vtviewpoint@radiovermont, another way that you can recommend books to us or comment on books. I love anything with Puffin in the title, so I'm going to start with Star. Tell us about a book with Puffin in the title that you like.
Oh, thank you so much. This is a great book to start the whole list with. So this is a book written for young people, but appreciated by all ages, and we are so lucky, I am so lucky to work in the town that Anne Braden lives in. You may know her for her book, The Benefits of Being an Octopus, which was NPR Best 100 Books of the Year it was published, and now this is her brand new title. Anne started a movement in this community called Love Brigade, and where they send postcards of love and support to anywhere in the United States or really the world that is experiencing some kind of distress or trauma. And so she sort of used that as the spark of inspiration for this book. And it's a story about four kids, and it's intertwined, even though the kids are located across the country from one another. But it starts with Libby, who is an artist, but she comes from a family of bullies. So she, in her own defense, she starts making beautiful little postcards with positive messages and leaves them around her town. And when she hears about another kid that's being bullied, she sends a postcard to him, and gradually people pick up these postcards, send them off, and to bring joy and support into these other kids' lives. And ultimately, they all come together. But I love to read for character. That's my favorite thing to read for. And these are four fantastic characters. There's Vincent, who loves the mathematician Catherine Johnson and wants to wear a puffin shirt to school every day, even though it's a little small for him. and he meets T, who is a young person living on the street because life at home had become untenable, and they're both in the Pacific Northwest. And then there's Jack, who's from this sort of neck of the woods, who lives in the rural community that is in danger of losing their school, and he has the biggest, best heart, despite a horrible, horrible injury to it. This is a book that it will make you feel great, and it will also make you cry, probably. But it's a wonderful, wonderful book to share with people of all ages.
I love it. The Flight of the Puffin by Anne Braden. Claire, where do you want to start today?
Well, I'll start with a book called Milk Fed by Melissa Broder. It's a novel, and I just love this one, and just ate it right up. This is a story about Rachel, who is a calorie-counting, food-obsessed person. She basically has disordered eating, and she won't let herself any extra calories. And she goes for her daily 100-calorie low-fat froyo at the local frozen yogurt place. And, no toppings, because that would be too many calories, and just the small and the low-fat one. But there's a new woman working there, and she's a little heavy. She's plump. She's enthusiastic, and she's like, listen, I'm going to make you a sundae, and she puts all those forbidden toppings on her daily froyo, and Rachel eats it, and it unleashes her appetites, and it's just a really great look at what sustains us as humans, as women. Is it food, love, sex, spirituality, our mother's love, frozen yogurt, like what is it we need to sustain us? And you get to take Rachel's whole journey when she just lets go and finds out what happens when she follows her appetites. It's funny, and it's really warm and moving, and it's a little sexy, and I just devoured it. I devoured it like a froyo.
You did, indeed. And, I bet a lot of people got in touch with what sustains us during this past year. We had a lot of time to reflect on those things. Let's go to the phones and hear what Stephen is enjoying. He's from Montpelier. Hi, Stephen.
Good morning, Rick. This is not about a book, but I was reading about libraries in Norway, and apparently people can go into libraries and say, I want to have somebody tell me a story for half an hour. And it could be a volunteer that's in the library. It could be a doctor, a legislator, somebody with a mental illness, or somebody with, racial issues, and they can take out or have somebody in the library in Norway tell them for half an hour, tell them their story, whatever their story might be.
Mm. Wow, Stephen, what a concept. Sometimes that's open phones here on this show when I don't get any calls. But, Star, that is a really interesting concept for a library to provide that kind of storytelling, someone telling their own story to someone else.
That's absolutely true, because that's really what binds us all together is story. And that human connection, and especially if you can sit and speak with someone with a different kind of opinion or a different background or just a different perspective, it can be a life-changing moment. So I love this, and I'm hoping now that we can have personal connections again that we'll be able to institute something in the Brattleboro area around that similar setup.
And not just for the person hearing the story, but for the person telling the story, to have someone, be attentive and listen to their story. Interesting. All right, talking about stories, Star, where do you want to go next? What's another one you want to recommend?
Well, speaking of stories, I'm going to talk about Love in Color, which is mythical tales from around the world retold. And it's by Bolu Babalola. And so she has taken some of, some standard stories, folkloric tales like Scheherazade, Nefertiti, Thisbe, Psyche, all these stories, and she's given them a contemporary setting and retold them. And again, like the story Claire told about, they're sexy, they're appealing, and they are every single story is just a tasty morsel that you can take, you know, just one at a time. That's how I'd recommend approaching this book, because you want to really savor each story. And those archetypal stories are so satisfying because they're about justice, and they're about passion, and they're about love, and she has served them up just beautifully. There's a wonderful, wonderful story called Ya, which is from the Ashanti tribe in Ghana, that just captured me immediately. Mm. And so this is a really fresh take on that. And it's, like I said, you know, tremendously satisfying. And then at the end, she's created a few of her own original compositions in a folkloric style. So this is folk tales and fairy tales for grown-ups.
I love it.
And that's a lot of fun.
All right. And Claire, another from you.
Let's see. I have a book called Sad Janet by Lucy Britch, and this is just a fun little book about, well, I'm saying it's fun, but because it's very funny. The Janet is rather depressed, actually, and she works at a rundown dog shelter out in the middle of nowhere, and she is sad, and she definitely has depression, and her family, her boyfriend, all want her to do something about it, namely, you know, take some medication. And despite this, Janet is really quite funny. So it balances out really nicely. You don't feel like you're reading an overly depressing book. So she is resisting taking medication. But finally, the idea of just spending Christmas alone is just too much for her. So she gives in to them. And this is the story of what happens. And it's just really just warm, and it gives you a kind of an insight into a depressive mind a little bit, and like all great books, kind of makes you understand somebody else's mindset, and really entertaining.
It reminds me somewhat of a book I'm reading right now, different character, but similar in a way. Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. And let's go to Stuart in Worcester. Hi, Stuart.
Hi there. This is the first time I've caught this version of your program, and I do have a book I'd like to recommend.
Excellent.
It's by a Vermont author, and he is Robert Newton Peck, and the title of the book is A Day No Pigs Would Die. This is a wonderful book. It's probably classified as a young adult, but it should be read by parents, and I recommend it to every young adult I meet. It's a story about life on the farm in maybe the late 1800s, early 1900s in Vermont. But I don't know if I'm using the right term. The voice, the presentation, you are immediately moved into the setting, and you feel that the characters are so real and the actions are so real. It's like the characters are telling the story. I don't want to give away the major theme or any of the events, but it's really a very moving story and very, very interesting. It'll carry you right along. You won't want to put the book down.
Oh, I love it. Okay, it's Robert Newton Peck, A Day No Pigs Would Die, and he's a Vermont author.
Yes.
Stuart, thanks so much for that recommendation. And I love, and you know, I'm like this, YA books are right in my wheelhouse. And I think Stuart brings up a good reason. Claire, you know, it may be written for, that younger group, 12 to whatever, 16 or 18. But boy, does it give you a perspective, right, on what, like, is going on with a generation that you're no longer part of, and what they're thinking and what's important to them. Is that what you get from YA books, Claire?
Absolutely. I mean, it keeps you young, for one thing, but it does give you a perspective. And the writing, the YA, what's happening in YA books right now is really great quality literature. And we have a lot of adults who read YA because of that. It's they're not silly little books for teenagers at all. They're quite well done and cover quite a range of issues, very topical issues.
Yeah.
And are quite popular with teens and adults.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people kind of think, oh, it's like a Tiger Beat magazine, you know, it's just going to be fluffy and glossy, but it really isn't. Some of the issues that are taken on in YA books really are startling when you read them as an adult and you think, oh my gosh, this is what's going on with our kids. I need to read about this. I need to know about it. Claire, your turn to start us off with a book recommendation.
Okay. I have Interior Chinatown by Charles Yu. This book won the National Book Award last year, and I just loved it. It's really creatively written. It's the book is set up like a movie script, so it's written in the format of a movie script, and it's about Willis Wu, who is an Asian American, a Chinese American man living in San Francisco's Chinatown, and he really wants to break into acting in Hollywood, and he's having trouble moving beyond getting roles of being like generic Asian man is like the best role he's getting in movies, and he wants to move up and hit the pinnacle, and which it, for a Chinese American is Kung Fu Man in a movie, and that is what he sees as success. And so, what is about? It's a book about race in Hollywood, and being Chinese American in Hollywood is really a metaphor for Chinese American identity or Asian American identity in the United States. And Willis really struggles to find his identity, and he represents a lot of people. And for me, as a white person, I found it really eye-opening to see the perspective on how Asian American people fit in the United States amongst the discussion of race issues, the larger discussion of race. And so I found it really entertaining. And really educational, too.
All right, that's Interior Chinatown by Charles Yu. Star, what do you have for us?
Well, I'll follow up with Saigon. So it's S-I-G-H, comma, G-O-N-E. But it's a story, it's a memoir of a person who came over as a Vietnamese refugee in the late 70s, and his family settled in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Mm. So some about as far afield as you can get.
Yep.
And he was for many, many years, he and his brother were the only Vietnamese people or Vietnamese kids in their schools. So he didn't fit in, so he decided to stick out. So he became involved with punk rock, which is great. And then he also, because he was working as a page at the local library, he bought a reading list of a book that was being discarded, but it was great books that, you know, everyone should read. And so he has wrapped his story within the books that he read from that list. And the great thing is, it is so funny. It's a great, funny memoir, and it will have a lot of just basic universal experiences that will be recognizable to all of us, you know, of misbehaving with his brother, you know, jumping from bed to bed, and no matter how many times his parents had come in and asked him to go to bed, and having a pillow fight, and then all of a sudden they hear their parents' door open, their bedroom door open, and that they don't come into their bedroom, even though they're, you know, hunkered down under the covers. And they look out, and their parents are walking down the stairs with suitcases in their coats. And they're like, nope, we're leaving. We've asked you to behave. We've asked time and time again, and you just won't behave. We're leaving. And they get in the car and drive off. And it's a great scene between him, between Phuc Tran and his little brother. About his little brother, he's like, we're gonna starve. He said, no, you know, I got this, you know, I can handle this. And he makes some toast with soy sauce on it, and they decide it's not too bad, you know. And then he does the dishes. But anyway, it's just, you know, those kinds of scenes that are then also wrapped within their family culture, and their extended family of other Vietnamese people within their community that they interact with and other family members that have come over from Vietnam. So I highly recommend it, you know, for punk rockers, for readers of great literature, or somebody just looking for a great human story.
It's all right.
That's a wonderful book.
Saigon. That's two words, S-I-G-H-G-O-N-E. Let's get another call in before the break. Let's go to Marcia in Barry. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, morning, Rick.
And morning.
Good morning to everybody, and thank you. I'll try to make this brief for you.
Okay.
Unless you want to go over. I just finished reading The Queen's Gambit.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't recall the author's last name. His first name is Matt. His first name is Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the antecedent for that very excellent series on one of the streaming networks that just was out recently, and that's how I heard about this, because I can't get those, so I wanted to read the book. And it's about a girl's life from age 8 as an orphan in the 50s in Kentucky, and how she becomes a chess odyssey, a chess prodigy, excuse me, and how she meanders through up to age 19 as a prodigy and on the tournament circuit, but you also go through the stages of her life, and first as an orphan and then as adopted, and the other strand in this book is that she is that what they did in this orphanage in the mid-50s is that they gave the kids tranquilizers.
Wow.
And she became addicted, and how she copes with her addiction throughout her adolescence, and then she also gets into alcohol, and how she copes with all these things. But this is so suspenseful. It's every sentence takes you on another roller coaster of feeling and emotion.
Wow.
It is so awesome, and you don't have to know chess.
Right.
But I totally recommend it. I just finished reading it on audio last night.
All right, Marcia, perfect recommendation as we go into the break. It's The Queen's Gambit. That's Walter Tevis is the author of that one. We also heard about Saigon by Puc Tran, also Interior Chinatown, Charles Yu, and from Stuart in Worcester, he recommended A Day No Pigs Would Die by Robert Newton Peake. We've got plenty more. We're going to take a break for CBS News. We'll be back and go the full hour with Claire and Star on our book show. And coming up on WDEV this evening, want to let you know, first Thursday night racing action from Thunder Road. That starts at 8:30. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Let our staff at the Warren Store ease you back into a pre-pandemic lifestyle. We can cater your postponed events and even bake you a custom cake. We can dress you in comfortable casual clothing. Make it a day trip for the best one-stop shopping in Vermont. Have lunch on our deck, head upstairs for some much-needed retail therapy, then treat yourself to a specialty coffee from our new espresso machine. You can pick up a colorful Warren Store beach towel for a dip in the river, and how about a delicious house-made ice cream sandwich? Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. Warren Store, Main Street, Warren Village, and warrenstore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Sengary. Reading can be fun. It can be enthralling, educational, uplifting, transformational. I'm thinking the effect of Dr. Wayne Dyer's Your Erroneous Zones or Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching have had on me. Well, this hour, we're swapping book recommendations. You can call in with yours at 244-1777, 877-291-8255, or email us, vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. We've got Claire Benedict of Montpelier's Bear Pond Books and Star Electronica of Brattleboro's Brooks Memorial Library sharing their thoughts. And let's go back to Stephen, who's calling us again from Montpelier, this time with a book recommendation. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Rick. I'd like to recommend Report from Practically Nowhere. And this is a book about the smallest countries in the world.
Mm.
And for example, they talk about the SMOM, and I don't know if you've ever heard of that country, but it's called the Sovereign and Military Order of St. John of Jerusalem, Rhodes, and Malta. And wow. In the 1100s, it started out in Malta as a religious order,
mm-hmm.
and they were basically divers that blew up ships. And later, several hundred years later, they got kicked out to the island of Rhodes, where they were for several hundred years. And then the order was kicked out of there, and they were given an apartment building in downtown Rome, which was a hospital and a sovereign country called the Sovereign and Military Order of St. John of Jerusalem, Rhodes, and Malta. And until 1953, they had a navy, but it rusted and sank. And so there are all sorts of other small countries in the world that they talk about in the book.
Oh, wow. That sounds great, Stephen. All right. It's Report from Practically Nowhere, and it's by John Sack and actually illustrated by Shel Silverstein. It does cover some of the ones you will know, Andorra, Monaco, Liechtenstein, San Marino, but then others that you don't. Thanks for that recommendation, Stephen. All right. Let's go back to Starletronica for another recommendation from you. Go right ahead.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about anxious people.
Oh, yeah.
We have all been anxious this last year and a half. So I wasn't sure when I picked this book up, do I really want to read about more anxious people?
Right.
And, oh, I am so glad I did.
Yes.
I adored this book. Like I said before, I read for character, and the characters in this book were so fantastic. When I was nearing the end, I kept putting it down and going and doing something else because I just didn't want to let mm-hmm. go of them. I loved hanging out with them so much.
Yeah.
It's a book about mystery. There's a mystery going on in it. It's like a puzzle mystery. And just when you think you know where the pieces should go, another piece shows up,
right.
Another secret compartment, another mysterious trunk, something hidden in a book. It's just all beautifully, beautifully put together with these great, great people who just gently unspool through the whole book. So you think, at the opening scene, you think, oh, yeah, okay, I know that guy. I know what that guy's all about. But you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a little bit of backstory will slip in, and your entire perception of that person changes. And I think that's so important because we do make those quick judgments about people.
Yeah, I love this one.
I know, right?
It's by Frederick Backman, who also wrote, people might know, A Man Called Ove. And that was beautiful as well. If you liked his style of writing, you'll enjoy this as well. You'll love the characters. They'll stay with you. Anxious People by Frederick Backman, great star. How about you, Claire?
I have a graphic novel to recommend. Mm-hmm. It's a graphic memoir, really. It's called Good Talk, A Memoir in Conversations by Mira Jacob. And I don't read a lot of graphic novels, but this one really grabbed me. And it's about this. Mira Jacob is an Indian American woman, and she is married to a Jewish man in the United States, and they have a young son. And when Trump came into office and a lot of issues about race and about being brown came up, her young son was asking her a lot of questions about race and about where he belongs. And she had a lot of trouble answering those questions because there were a lot of things that she hadn't thought about in her life, and she didn't give race a lot of thought. And but she wanted to give her son, you know, give him the right answers.
Mm-hmm.
So this book kind of follows the conversations she's had with her son and with other people around race, and it's really well done. We're talking about race again, but I think
that's right.
Like in 2021, when you're reading contemporary novels, there's a lot of racial issues come
right.
up, and which I think is great. What I liked about this book is this woman doesn't have all the answers. She is not preaching to you and telling you how to think or anything. She's really trying to figure it out herself, and she does it really effectively. She does the illustrations in the book too, and it all works together just so well. And it's a very kind of touching book because she's kind of like all of us who we just don't always know the answers to these questions, but we're going to keep asking and seeing if we can figure it out.
Good Talk by Mira Jacob. And I want you to tell next time Howard Norman gets his next graphic novel out. The first one I know is out. I think it's like one of a 9 or 10 part series. But Claire, as soon as number two comes out, I'm going to rush to Bear Pond Books and okay. pick that one up. I can't wait. All right. This is going to be kind of a jump ball. We had a listener write in and says, can you ask if either has read Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid and what they thought. Now, I don't know this book, but I did read one of Taylor Jenkins Reid's previous books called Daisy Jones and the Six, which I really loved. But do either of you know Malibu Rising?
I do. I've read it.
And?
I liked it. It's really good. I loved Daisy Jones, too.
Okay.
Really fun. And Malibu Rising takes place in the 80s, I think. And it's this family who have lost both their parents. Their mother has passed away, and their father is kind of this megastar who abandoned them. He's kind of a Frank Sinatra-like character who abandoned them and their mother when they were young. And there are four young adults living in Malibu, and they surf, and they're like living this beautiful life, but there's a lot of kind of pain behind it too. But it's they're kind of living the dream. This is a great beach read. It's a lot of surfing, a lot of beach, a lot of parties, and but all of their secrets and all of their background kind of culminates in this one big party, big beach party in, at the end of summer, and a lot of stuff happens. It's
gotcha.
Good. It's totally bring it to the beach. You'll gobble it up.
Star, any beach reads from you?
Well, that's a good question. Well, actually, I would pull out the Thursday Murder Club.
Okay.
And it's not a summary type book, but it takes place over the summer, but it's set in England. It's written by Richard Osman, who is a TV personality in Britain. And this is a murder mystery set in a retirement community. So it's a group of disparate characters that get together every Thursday night. One of them was a former police woman and has a lot of back files, and they set to work solving cold cases. And they invite a local young policewoman to come and talk to them, and she thinks she's going to talk to them about, you know, not being scammed, but really they want her help in solving these murders. Mm-hmm. And then real murders start to happen, and people are dropping like flies. So it's a book that will make you laugh, and it's a book that may make you cry.
Oh, so love it.
You may not want to do that at the beach, but
right.
You'll laugh at the beach.
All right. So this segment, here's what we've had recommended. Good Talk by Mira Jacob, Anxious People by Frederick Backman, Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman, Malibu Rising, Taylor Jenkins Reid, Report from Practically Nowhere by John Sack. I threw in Taylor Jenkins Reid's Daisy Jones and the Sixth, and virtually anything by Howard Norman. But if you haven't read any Howard, start with The Bird Artist, please. And we have Nancy in Morrisville. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, and thank you all. I don't have a lot of time for reading, so I actually probably never read non-fiction books. Definitely prefer reference books, be it something about wildlife or birds. In terms of wildlife, there's a great one by Ron Rude, who's a Vermont person. Animals Nobody Loves, a bunch of short reads. A really inspiring book by a local author. He lives in Johnson. The Power of Horses to Heal. It's called Riding Home. Also, let's see, wildlife, birds, cookbooks, ethnic cookbooks, and, you know, the sort of the reference Bible, The Joy of Cooking.
Right.
Whether you are a beginning cook or experienced, I would recommend those as well. Great short reads for cookbooks and stuff. And some of them are more extensive. But anyway, happy reading.
Oh, thank you so much, Nancy. Yeah, we forget sometimes about cookbooks or nonfiction when we get so caught up in novels. I'll throw out a couple cookbooks from local wonderful cookbook writers. Melissa Passanen has a new one out, The Little Local Vermont Cookbook. And Tracy Medeiros, The Art of Cooking with Cannabis. And even if you aren't going to cook with CBD or hemp or marijuana, the recipes stand alone, and they're just absolutely wonderful. She's tested them and made them very simple to enjoy. All right, who's next? Star, you want to throw out a recommendation of yours?
Sure. I'll talk about some graphic novels because graphic memoir is also on my list, and it's called Flamer. Mm-hmm. It's by Mike Tirado, who is Filipino-American, and this is the story of his coming of age. The summer that he comes to the realization that he's gay, he's very artistic, goes to Boy Scout camp, has his first crush, and it's just a lovely, poignant, supportive kind of story, but also, you know, plenty of humor, and he did the illustrations himself. And then the other series that I would mention, which is also a graphic novel format, is the World Citizen Comics, and these are written for adults, really, but certainly accessible for younger people, and they've gathered together a group of well-known authors, like Dan Rather has written the one on What Unites Us, and Daniel Newman has written Unrig, How to Fix Our Broken Democracy. So it's a very accessible way to take a look at the way things are and how they have become that way.
Nice. Claire Benedict, where do you want to take us?
Well, I have another novel by a Vermont author. It's Afterlife by Julia Alvarez.
Yeah.
And this is just such a little gorgeous gem of a book. I want everybody to read it. Everybody I know who's read it has been really moved by it and has loved it. And it's about Antonia, who is living in Vermont, and she's a retired English professor, and she's recently lost her husband, and she's trying to find balance in her life for the grief that she's feeling, but also some social issues in that at a neighboring family farm, there's some illegal Mexican immigrants who are struggling and hoping not to be deported, and she's trying to help out with them because she speaks Spanish. She's always called on to help out. And so she's trying to deal with all these things in the world that feel really overwhelmingly demanding to her. And it's just a beautiful book. It's her writing is just lovely, and it's a story of everybody who grieves, and it's really written with a lot of compassion.
I do want to talk about how recommendations do have a ripple effect. And Claire Benedict, you're going to love this story. So a number of months ago on the morning news service here on WDEV, Claire was telling us about a book that had to do with high school field hockey players, and it's called We Ride Upon Sticks by Quan Barry. And I have a buddy back in Pennsylvania, Westchester, Pennsylvania, who bored one day, didn't have anything to do. He was at Westchester University and happened upon a field hockey match and was absolutely stunned, just mesmerized by the incredible athleticism and speed of this game, and became a big field hockey fan. And he's come up to Vermont. I've gone back to Pennsylvania. We've gone on field hockey tours. We go see colleges play field hockey. We've been up to Montreal to see McGill. And so I told him about this book, Claire, and he's in book club. And the next time it came his chance to recommend a book, he said, oh, I'm doing this. He's so tired of the books that have been recommended. They're heavier and, you know, more, I don't know, interesting. And he said, I'm recommending We Ride Upon Sticks. He hadn't read it yet. They loved it. They absolutely just fell out. And I have it. I haven't even gotten to it yet. I've got so many books stacked up, but it's on my list. So great recommendation.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that great?
I love it. We love that book. So many of us, everybody here on the staff, love that book so much. I'm so pleased that it found its way out into the world.
Yeah, that is really fabulous. I think we're going to get enough time for each of you for one more recommendation. So Star, lead us off.
Okay, I'm going to go with one of my favorite authors of all time, Daniel Pinkwater, who many people may know from his time on NPR. And he has come out with a new book for young people called The Adventures of a Dwarvish Girl. And the magic of Daniel Pinkwater is he can have the most outlandish plots in the world, and yet he delivers them with such a straight face and such a deadpan tone that they are even funnier and even quirkier because of the way he writes. I love the way Daniel Pinkwater writes, and so it was wonderful to have another adventure with him and this girl that is a member of a mythical group of people that live in the Catskills. They may have had something to do with Rip Van Winkle, I'm just saying.
Adventures of a Dwergish Girl. It's Daniel Pinkwater. How about you, Claire?
Well, I loved Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld, and this is a novel about Hillary Rodham Clinton. It is fiction, and it's a reimagining of Hillary's life if she had decided not to marry Bill Clinton when she had the opportunity, and what the trajectory of her life would have been, and also what would have happened to Bill Clinton if he hadn't been married to Hillary. So it takes us through her life, and it's done really realistically. Like, you can see it really happening, and it's just a really interesting idea for a book, and I just kind of was riveted through the whole thing, even knowing it wasn't true. You feel like it almost is, like it could have been, and it's kind of a good, juicy read, and I think that people will really enjoy.
All right, that is Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld, and since we're talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton, I do want to mention, so one of my favorite writers is Louise Penny and her Gamache series. Her most recent is All the Devils Are Here, a wonderful one. It's this time set over in Paris, France, but she is currently co-writing her next novel with Hillary. So that, I think, will be out probably in the fall. She usually releases a book. So we'll hear about that. I want to throw out a few more that I'm reading right now. A Distant Grave by Sarah Stuart Taylor, and she will be on with us next week to talk about this. Now, this is from her Maggie Darcy series. You know, she has a few other series. She has the Sweeney St. George series and then the YA series, The Expeditioners. But this is the second in, it follows, The Mountains Wild, and the new one is going to be called A Distant Grave, and that comes out in, I think on the 26th. So,
it's out.
Oh, is it out?
We have it.
Oh, good. Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
Then I'm behind. Okay, good. So I'll have her next week. That's Sarah Stuart Taylor. She also goes by S.S. Taylor for that YA series. One more that I'll throw out there, and I spoke to him recently. This book, it was the winner of the Norwich University William E. Colby Award, and it's by another Vermonter, lives here in Vermont and I think in Virginia, and his name is Mark Trainer, and it's called A Quiet Cadence. And it's a novel, but it reads like nonfiction of the war in Vietnam. And it really gives you a perspective of what the soldiers who were drafted into that war went through you know, on the ground, fighting in Vietnam. It's called A Quiet Cadence by Mark Trainer. All right, let me give a update on these most recent recommendations. We had Afterlife by Julia Alvarez, Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld, Adventures of a Dwergish Girl, Daniel Pinkwater, Flamer by Mike Corrado. Let me see what else. World Citizen comic series, and Nancy in Morrisville said, don't forget about nonfiction, Animals Nobody Loves, Riding Home, and The Joy of Cooking. And then a couple cookbooks I threw in, The Little Local Vermont Cookbook and The Art of Cooking with Cannabis. So I think everyone now has a robust list, and I will try to get these all onto the WDE Facebook page in case you missed any and you want to see what everybody recommended this morning. Star Latronica is director of the Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro. Claire Benedict, owner of Bear Pond Books in Montpelier. I loved having you on. Thank you both so much for your recommendations this morning.
Thank you. It was fun.
It was so much fun hanging out with both of you, and I have a great list now to go read.
There you go. All right. Our recommenders get recommendations. All right. That's our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is produced by Zoe Helena, Rachel Connor, and Willow Zartarian, and directed by, he was very busy this morning, Danny McGivrigan. Thanks, Danny. Our email address, radiovermont.com. And please feel free to suggest topics or guests, follow up on anything we talked about. You can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by downloading our podcast. That's at wdevradio.com. Common Sense Radio is up next with Bill Sayre. I'm Rick Singeri, and I'll meet you back here tomorrow.